From the best-selling Heroes of History series, Emerald Books presents William Wilberforce, Take Up the Fight, by Janet and Jeff Benge. Read for you by Tim Gregory. For information about other titles from this outstanding series that brings history to life, please visit heroesthenandnow.com or call 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. Turmoil. William Wilberforce walked along the river wall behind his house on High Street. He shielded his eyes from the sun and stared down at the muddy Hull River looking for ships flying his family's crest. The black eagle of the crest was distinctive. In the distance, William could spot the flag on ships sailing up the Humber River before they rounded the spit and came up the Hull River. His father had told him that the Wilberforce Company was expecting a ship filled with timber from Norway and iron and tar from Sweden to arrive today from the Baltic region. The day before, William had watched dock workers load bales of Yorkshire wool and bolts of sailcloth into the company warehouse beside the river at the back of the Wilberforce home. Once the cargo had been unloaded from the ship, huge nets were used to hoist a new cargo from the other end of the warehouse onto the ship for the return voyage. William enjoyed most watching the Yorkshire ponies, usually bound for Russia, being loaded. A sling was wrapped around each pony, and one by one, the kicking and wriggling animals were hoisted aboard by a wood-framed crane. No matter how many times William watched a ship sail up the river, dock beside the warehouse, and unload and reload cargo, he never got bored. There was so much to see. Hull was the fourth largest port in England, after London, Bristol, and Liverpool. William's ancestors, the Wilberforces and the Thorntons, had been merchants for over 100 years, and William was sure that his father, Robert, knew all there was to know about trading with Europe. Much of his information came from the captains of ships who often came to the house for dinner. William listened to the business talk as the men ate, but most of all, he loved to hear about shipwrecks and pirates. His sister Sarah, or Sally, as everyone called her, loved to hear these stories too. Sally was a year older than William, and the captains often brought the two of them chocolates from Holland, along with tulips for their mother's garden and port wine for their father. Until a month ago, William had had another sister. 14-year-old Elizabeth had been at boarding school in London when she suddenly fell ill and died. A messenger had arrived at the house with the news, and Robert Wilberforce immediately galloped off to London to escort his daughter's body back to be buried at Holy Trinity Church. William and Sally were dressed in black mourning clothes, black stockings, jacket, and cap for William, and a black matte silk dress, crepe hat, and veil for Sally. William and Sally were expected to stay indoors for days. William's mother never left the house after receiving the news of Elizabeth's death. She was normally the hub of various social gatherings in the community, card evenings, plays, dinner parties, and the other things the upper-class residents of Hull did to entertain themselves. But now, she stayed in her bedroom. William knew that her behavior change was partly due to Elizabeth's death, and partly because she was 8 months pregnant. He hoped that the new baby would be a boy, a little brother for him to play with. Even though the baby would be 9 years younger, William still imagined himself teaching his new brother to play marbles and walk safely along the top of the river wall. Walking along the wall was one of William's favorite pastimes. With the wind blowing through his hair and the sound of the gulls overhead, William could let his imagination run wild. Sometimes he was a cabin boy on his way to France, while at other times he was a burly whaler setting sail for Greenland. On Saturdays, when school was out, William often walked along the wall, past the Pisa's warehouse, and the Blades' home, past the shipbuilding docks, and out into the country. He loved the countryside almost as much as the river. He would sit for a long time listening to the croaking toads and watching them leap into ponds and swim around. Sometimes he would spot a badger foraging among the trees for worms and insects. William's teachers at Hull Grammar School, Master Joseph Milner and his brother, Master Isaac Milner, encouraged William to keep a nature diary, which was always tucked inside his waistcoat. The Milner brothers were both excellent teachers. William's grandfather, whom William was named after, had served as Hull's mayor and was a long-standing alderman. He had hand-picked Joseph Milner to be the schoolmaster when Williams was old enough to start attending school at 7 years of age. Joseph Milner had won the Chancellor's Medal at Cambridge and had been the curate at North Ferriby, where Grandfather Wilberforce lived. Joseph's 18-year-old brother Isaac was his assistant. To William, Isaac looked like a giant, but a gentle one, and Isaac knew how to make mathematics interesting. Unlike many other boys his age, William loved school. On his walks, he often thought about school. It was a wonderful place. He knew he probably got special attention from the Milners because his father was one of the wealthiest men in Hull. But William also thought that the brothers genuinely liked him. He was often singled out to read to the class. At 9 years of age, William was small, smaller than most of the new entrants, who were 7 years old, and he had poor eyesight. But he had a powerful voice. Joseph Milner would lift William onto the top of a desk and ask him to read passages from Shakespeare. William loved the sound of the words as he read. One Saturday, when William returned from his walk in the countryside, he found the house filled with activity. The baby was coming. Aunt Mary, William's mother's sister, who was married to William's father's business partner, Abel Smith, was instructing the cook to boil water and the maid to bring clean linens and towels. William and Sally played a game of chess in the drawing room waiting for news. The baby came soon enough. William and Sally now had a new sister named Anne, and not the brother William had hoped for. The children were allowed to tiptoe into their mother's bedroom, the same room William had been born in, to see the newly arrived tiny pink bundle. There was celebrating in the Wilberforce home. William's father handed out bottles of Madeira to the clerks who worked in the counting house and gave each household servant a shiny new shilling. The celebration of the birth of the new baby soon turned to shock, however, as William's father fell seriously ill. In just a matter of days, Robert Wilberforce died. The family was thrown into turmoil. William, who had hardly adjusted to the idea that his sister Elizabeth was buried in the local church graveyard, watched his father's body being lowered into the grave at St. Mary's Church in Beverly, where the Wilberforces hailed from originally, and where William's great-grandparents were buried. It was almost too much to bear. With her husband gone, William's mother seldom came downstairs, and a nursemaid looked after baby Anne. The house felt empty to William. Uncle Abel Smith, who lived in Nottinghamshire, took over the family business, renaming it Wilberforce and Smith. He left most of the day-to-day dealings of the company in the hands of Thomas Thompson, who had been Robert Wilberforce's right-hand man. Less than a year later, the Wilberforce family encountered a new crisis. This time it was William's mother who was seriously ill. A family conference was called. William was not allowed to attend, but he overheard snippets of conversation between his grandfather and his aunts and uncles. From what William could gather, his mother wanted to send him away to school and wanted someone else to take responsibility for him in case she died. William's mind whirled with possibilities. His family was complicated. He could hardly keep the connection straight. His father had an older brother, also named William, and two sisters, Judith and Anne. Uncle William and his wife, Hannah, who was also William's father's first cousin, lived in London. Aunt Judith was married to John Bird, who was William's mother's brother, while Aunt Anne was married to John Greathed. All of these relatives were also merchants or bankers. Eventually, the family conference decided that William should go to London to live with Uncle William and Aunt Hannah. The couple had no children of their own, and said they would welcome William with open arms. In summer 1769, Uncle William came to Hull to take his nephew back to London. On the way to London, they stopped at Wilford House in Nottinghamshire, where Uncle Abel and Aunt Mary Smith lived. Sadly, the Smiths' oldest son and William's cousin, Thomas, had just died, and the Smith family was in mourning. William had just celebrated his 10th birthday on August 24, 1769. As he climbed into the coach in Nottinghamshire for the trip to London to begin a new life, he felt much older than his years. The coach trip to London was long, bumpy, and dangerous. At night, they would lodge at inns along the way. During the day, as they headed south, the coach driver and even Uncle William were constantly on the lookout for highwaymen wanting to rob them. William didn't know much about London. He'd never been there, though he did know that it was huge, with over 750,000 people, none of whom he knew, living in the city. Once he arrived in London, William soon learned that he had a knack for making friends with all sorts of people, and he was curious about everything around him. His aunt and uncle had two beautiful homes. One was a villa in the countryside at Wimbledon called Lauriston House, which had 3 acres of manicured lawns and gardens for William to roam in. At Lauriston House, William soon got to know the gardener and learn how to prune apple trees and store bulbs for spring. Uncle William had commissioned a famous artist named Angelica Kaufman to paint stunning murals inside the house on the walls of the staircase and on the ceilings. The other house was in the center of London activity at St. James Place. King George III had a house nearby, as did many of the richest men in England. Uncle William was certainly one of them. He was one of the biggest merchants in London, trading with merchants in Europe, just as William's own father had done. Although William loved both houses, he did not spend much time in them. He was shipped off to boarding school in Putney, outside London. William was disappointed by this, but he soon settled into the routine of school, learning writing, French, math, and Latin. William's new schoolmaster didn't know how to make the lessons interesting in the way that the Milner brothers had back in Hull. William also found the food served at the school greasy and hard to keep down. He longed for the delicious meals the family cook in Hull had made him. If the school in Putney didn't suit William, holidays and long weekends with Aunt Hannah and Uncle William did. Since the couple had no children, William fit into their family like a longed-for son. The Wilberforces took him everywhere and introduced him to their friends. It was eye-opening for William, who met the most interesting people in London, some of whom would change the course of his life.